Our last case for argument today is 24-1281, Cerrone v. HHS. Counsel, how do I say your last name?
Your Honor, it's pronounced Crockmull as if it were K-R-O-C-K-M-A-L.
Mr. Crockmull, please proceed.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'm representing petitioner appellant Nico Cerrone. And there's really three issues here today. Was Nico Cerrone adversely affected by the multiple vaccines he received? Did we meet our burden of proof of entitlement under Alton? And was the Chief Special Master's opinion in accordance with Federal Circuit precedents as required by the Act's Section 12E2B? Okay. Indulge me, please, with a 25-second primer on vaccines. Okay? Vaccines inject a foreign substance into the body so that the body produces antibodies, so when the real invasion comes, those antibodies are there to fight off that invasion. But sometimes those antibodies, while hanging around, attack the host, and that is called autoimmunity. Okay? It's a well-known theory in immunology. As a matter of fact, it's on the injury table because flu shots on the injury table cause GBS, Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is an autoimmune disease, and Guillain-Barré syndrome is an inflammation of nerve linings. Okay? In our case, we have an inflammation of the intestinal linings, not a stretch. Okay? So on October 7th, 2015, petitioner, a healthy 16-year-old, received multiple vaccines. In 81 days, he was rectally bleeding, okay, and when he, a couple of months later, received a second dose of one of those vaccines, he again had rectal bleeding. This time, he told his single mother, and he was taken to the hospital and eventually diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, ulcerative colitis. He had two surgeries, and, Your Honors, he was unable to go to his junior prom. I think the colostomy bag was an impediment to his getting a date. Okay? Now, we have proven our case of entitlement under Alton Prong 1, a medical theory causally connecting the vaccine injury, the vaccine and the injury. Okay? And this court and the law has asked a lot about what is our burden of proof in this case. There's a legal burden, and I'm going to answer it this way. There's a legal burden, and there's a medical burden. And those are conflated, okay, like a Venn diagram, okay? And there's an overlap, okay? Boatman says it best, okay? And our burden is to provide a medical theory that is plausible by a preponderance of the evidence. Our burden is to show a medical theory that is plausible by a preponderance of sound and reliable medical evidence. Okay? I'm glad I could clear that up for the court. Okay? It is a conflation of what we have to prove.
We did both. Where do you get the word plausible from the case law?
In the what?
Where do you get the word plausible from the case law? Because that was an issue before the special master, who said it has to be reliable, not plausible.
He was demanding, plausible is used throughout the Federal Circuit precedents. Okay. The Chief Special Master is demanding
certainty. What's the best case
certainty.
You have on plausibility? Boatman.
Is Boatman.
Often.
B-O-A-T.
You say Often?
B-O-A-T-M-O-N. Yeah. And I believe it's in Often also. It's
no, Often uses a medical theory causally connecting. It
yes.
Doesn't use plausible as far as I can tell.
It is used in the case law, Your Honor.
And Boatman, you say, is the
Boatman,
best case for that?
In Often, right? It's plausible. It has to be conceivable. It does not have to be certain. As a matter of fact, the Doles decision, D-O-L-E-S, says that medical certainty is not required. It's plausibility of the medical theory. Okay? We have a well-credentialed expert. Credential, credence, credibility, all the same Latin root. He is an immunologist who teaches at a prestigious hospital, has long clinic hours, and is well-published.
Now, in Boatman, mm-hmm. going back to Boatman, we said we have consistently rejected the theories that the vaccine only likely caused the injury and reiterate that a plausible or possible causal theory does not satisfy the standard.
Okay.
So that seems to be exact opposite of what you were saying Boatman stands for. Maybe I'm not understanding the total context, but that's the portion of Boatman that I came upon.
Well, the best way for me to respond to that, Judge Bryson, is our proofs are beyond plausible. Okay? They are directly connected to the sequence of events that happened here. Okay? And the medical literature that we provided shows that. Okay? In our appendix 7794, even the government came up with four studies that show this direct connection between multiple vaccines, the vaccines that our client received, the petitioner received, and these injuries. Okay? When a new vaccine comes out, there's a list of things that they look for. One of them is irritable bowel disease, IBD, of which ulcerative colitis is. It's one of the things that they look for, and they found it. They actually found four cases where people that received these vaccines ended up with this injury. Okay? As a matter of also, one of the vaccines he received was Gardasil, which was an HPV vaccine. The insert talks about that this is a prospective problem. So we have a...
But the insert also contained reference to a study that doesn't seem to indicate that there was any connection, if I understand the study, between IBT and this particular vaccine.
I'm sorry.
You understand the study I'm talking about?
I do not.
Okay, well, there was, if I recall the record, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Gardasil package insert contains a reference to a study. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that study seemed to indicate that there was no correlation between, in other words, that the placebo group had no fewer incidents than the test group. In fact, they had more. Isn't that what the study showed?
Yes, Your Honor.
That seems to indicate the contrary of what you're saying.
But it shows that they are looking for it. And at least
not finding it.
Well, no. There's a difference between medical certainty and under this program. You know, there's the medical statistical significance and legal statistical significance. And maybe that is too fine a hair, but it is what has happened in this program.
Counsel, one of the things we haven't talked about is the standard of review. We are reviewing the special master's findings of fact. And as long as there is substantial evidence, which is not itself a preponderance, then we have to affirm.
It is substantial evidence if he is looking at the right factors under Olfin. And in our case, his legal error was that he found a lack of sufficient persuasive scientific studies. He discarded case studies. And the Doles decision, which came out recently, and we added as supplemental authority, says that case studies count. In our case, our well-credentialed expert bolstered his opinion of the sequence I named before of vaccines, antibodies, autoimmunity, our disease. He bolstered that with peer-reviewed scientific literature, okay, supported, by the way, by both sides, okay, case studies, which the special master discarded and Dole said shouldn't be discarded, by articles from the Institute of Medicine, government studies, and from VAERS reports, which are vaccine adverse event reporting system by doctors. Okay?
And of course, there are three Alfland factors.
Okay.
The third one is a temporal factor. And here, it's established fact that there were 81 days between the administration of the vaccine and the appearance of symptoms. And the court found that, therefore, that factor wasn't met.
Your Honor, it's conceded in this program by defendant's expert, and I want to make sure that I quote the right one. It is, I believe it's Dr. Lyakouris, who says, it is Dr. Lyakouris that says, admits that the onset of symptoms in this case was 81 days. The ulcerative colitis started with the first rectal bleeding, which was 81 days. And their expert agrees that that is the beginning of this ulcerative colitis. Next, the Dr. Lyakouris, Dr. Lyakouris says that that is within the time for a autoimmune disease to start up, because it takes time for this to develop. Okay? Your Honors, we all get flu shots, maybe, hopefully, and they tell you to get it before flu season because it takes time for antibodies to develop. Our expert has testified that it takes time for the vaccine to antibodies to develop the autoimmunity and for the autoimmunity to attack that system. But and the 81 days is within the realm for that to happen.
The special master found and the claims court affirmed that the period of 81 days was too attenuated to warrant compensation.
You're right, Your Honor.
That's a fact.
That's what he said, in spite of the fact that the record says it differently, that the experts agree that 81 days is when the ulcerative colitis started, and their experts agree that that is within the realm of time. So their immunologist, Romberg, says in his transcript, is 81 days medically reasonable?
The special master evaluates the testimony of the experts and makes a conclusion.
Yes, as the special master is supposed to look at the record as a whole, not pick and choose. Okay? And in this case, their experts talk about that 81 days, well, gee, here's the quote from their expert. Well, the question is 81 days medically reasonable, in your opinion, for this to occur? Well, GBS data certainly is consistent with the development of an autoimmune vaccine-induced injury. So, yeah, I think 81 days is reasonable. Okay? Their experts agree on the 81-day timetable, as do ours. Okay? And the Pollack case said, P-A-L-U-C-K, says that there is no set timetable here. Don't hold yourself to 80 days is not good enough, 81 days maybe, 82 days. There is no set timetable here. But 81 days for the onset of this to develop, right, is agreed upon that that's reasonable. And, Your Honor, we have a re-challenge here. Okay? So not only did he have...
Counsel, do you want to save any of your rebuttal time?
Okay, I do.
Okay,
I've got 52 seconds left. We have a re-challenge here. He received three vaccines. One of them was Gardasil. When he received the second Gardasil shot, he was almost immediately taken to the hospital with an onset of rectal bleeding again. That is an indication that, you know, maybe these vaccines are causing this problem. Your Honor, thank you.
Ms. Hansen?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Government asks that this Court affirm the decisions of the Court of Federal Claims and the Chief Special Master, because the Chief Special Master properly concluded the preponderance of the evidence is the burden of proof in this case, consistent with this Court's case law, as well as the governing statute. Further, the Chief Special Master did not heighten petitioner's burden of proof in his analysis. And third, the Chief Special Master denied this claim on all three Olfin prongs, properly weighing the totality of the evidence in this case and setting forth a reasonable basis for his decision as supported by that evidence. Significantly, appellant has raised no evidence that the Chief Special Master did not consider, not medical literature or not a record. In 43 pages, this Chief Special Master carefully considered all the evidence in this case, and he merely determined that the evidence dealing specifically with the vaccines and the injury combination in this case, which was more probative, consistent with this Court's decisions in Moberly and Brokelshen, demonstrated that there was no association, and therefore causation was not met.
Could you, just to get down into the weeds here, these cases always have lots of weeds in them. Could you respond to your opposing counsel's discussion of Dr. Romberg's testimony about timing?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Respondent would first point to page 25, footnote 8 of our brief, where we noted that in both this argument and in petitioner's brief, petitioner says that the government or its experts conceded many arguments. Those arguments have not been bolstered by cites to the appendix, and as the footnote explains, a further inquiry into the joint appendix in this case indicates that those cites often do not show concessions. Dr. Liakouris nor Dr. Romberg conceded that 81 days was appropriate for an onset between the vaccines at issue and ulcerative colitis. In fact, they filed multiple pieces of medical literature to the contrary, namely Chasang and an additional study that are both considered by the Chief Special Master in his prong three determination. The Chief Special Master determined that based on these animal studies, specifically focusing on the timing issue of ulcerative colitis, that the ulcerative colitis would have had to occur in a much shorter time frame than 81 days.
So your opposing counsel recited, I think, a quote from Dr. Romberg about, I think it was in reference to GBS, but do you take issue with either the substance or the context of that quote? I'm trying to get at whether, in fact, it's accurate to say that Dr. Romberg made this concession, and if not, why not?
So it's not accurate, Your Honor, and the government takes no issue with Dr. Romberg's discussion of the time frame as to GBS. That's not a concession as to the time frame for ulcerative colitis. Mm-hmm. While Guillain-Barré syndrome is an autoimmune disease, it involves the peripheral nervous system, while ulcerative colitis is involves the gut. Petitioner filed many such studies about Guillain-Barré syndrome, which Chief Special Master considered and determined that they weren't terribly probative because they were about a very different disease. So while the time frame for Guillain-Barré syndrome might be as far as 81 days, that does not mean that the time frame for ulcerative colitis is. So this purported concession that petitioner raises is hardly a concession at all.
And what exactly did Dr. Romberg say about the time frame for IBS. Anyway.
If I recall his testimony from the Chief Special Master's decision, the Chief Special Master particularly considered Dr. Romberg's testimony as to the innate immune system argument brought up by Dr. Rosenstrike. And he first pointed out that for there to be an innate immune system reaction, we would have seen something in the record indicating inflammation in hours to days following vaccination. And that's simply absent in this case, as the Chief Special Master pointed out, both under his prongs 2 and prongs 3 analysis. So that was Dr. Romberg's first point. Dr. Romberg also relied on these animal study models that he had discussed in his expert report, as well as in testimony, and again concluded that this was simply too long, that the best evidence looking at the issue indicated that it was shorter. And the Chief Special Master also considered this evidence. He considered both the articles that petitioner offered to support their time frame and the articles by Dr. Romberg. But Dr. Romberg did not indicate that 81 days would be appropriate. He might have indicated that it was not impossible, which is something our experts frequently say. As medical doctors, they're rather uncomfortable saying anything is impossible. But not impossible is not more likely than not. And that is the burden of proof in this case.
Well, that leads to a question that I asked your opposing counsel. What about the distinctions, or what is the right standard for Alton Step 1? Plausibility, reliability. The special master in this case rejected plausibility as the right standard. What do you think is the right standard?
Your Honor, can you
point me to law that says that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The statute, first and foremost, at 42 U.S.C. section 300AA13A1A explicitly states that entitlement to compensation must be, quote, demonstrated by a preponderance of the evidence.
Right.
Additionally, Your Honor, go ahead. Additionally, Your Honor, I would point this court's attention to Your Honor's decision as well as Chief Judge Moore's decision in Moberly, where this court clearly stated preponderance of the evidence in the standard. Additionally, that was upheld in both.
We say that, and then we have Alton. And Alton can be read, seems to me, and certainly has by some been read, to say that you don't actually have to have a preponderance as long as you have these three factors. Now, squaring Alton with the preponderance has always been something of a challenge. But I really want to start just with step one in that challenge, which is reliable the right standard for step one of Alton, or is it plausibility?
And
give me, if you would, a citation that says it's reliability, not plausibility, if you have any such.
One clarifying question, Your Honor. Is the court referring to the evidentiary burden or the quality of the evidence itself?
Well,
isn't your answer that the statute says causally?
Your Honor, I think, yes, that is certainly part of my answer, Your Honor. That's exactly right. It is a causal determination. But to Judge Bryson's point, I think if we look at Alton at page 1278, the Alton court concisely stated, Alton's burden, and in that case they're referring to the petitioner, Alton, not the case, Alton's burden is to show by preponderant evidence that the vaccination brought about her injury by providing, one, a medical theory causally connecting the vaccination and the injury, precisely to Judge Lurie's point. And as to plausibility, Your Honor, this court has twice rejected that standard. Once, to, as Your Honor brought up on inquiry with petitioner in Boatman, and secondly, in Lalonde at page 1339.
I'm sorry, what was that case?
The second one, Your Honor. Lalonde, L-A-L-O-N-D-E.
Oh, yes, I'm familiar with
that. Yes, okay. Yes. And the government fully agrees with Your Honor's reading of Boatman as you discussed on inquiry with petitioner. So the burden of proof is without a doubt preponderance of the evidence. And as this court stated in Boatman and Lalonde, and as this court recently affirmed just a year ago in Cologic, plausibility is not enough to meet prong one in this case. Nor in any vaccine case. It would contravene the statute, and it would contravene decades of this court's case law. Many of those cases are cited at page 12 of Appellee's brief.
Go ahead.
Oh, further, Your Honors, the government would point out that additionally in Cologic, This court noted that to argue for anything less than preponderance of the evidence would be plainly inconsistent with this court's precedents, offering a further demonstration that the standard is preponderance. And to ask for something less, like plausibility or possibility, would be to contravene the intent of Congress, as well as decades of consistent case law from this court. Kalogic also explicitly referenced several of the cases that petitioner is using to support their proposition that it's a lesser standard. This court particularly considered Andreu, Cotton Steady, and Capizano, and found that none of those cases contravened the preponderance of the evidence standard. And that case was decided less than a year ago. Further, Your Honors, we've discussed the prong three determination and how the Chief Special Master carefully weighed the evidence and ultimately determined that it simply didn't cross the prong three burden. But petitioner also asked this court to re-weigh on prong two. And the Chief Special Master considered all of the evidence the petitioner has raised to this court today. He considered the rechallenge theory. He considered petitioner's symptoms and ultimately determined that when he considered the record did not preponderate evidence that was consistent with petitioner's prong one theory. Petitioner's theory relied on autoantibodies. Mr. Cerrone had been tested for those autoantibodies and found not to have them. There was no evidence in the medical records of a challenge to the innate immune system. And further, Your Honors, the Chief Special Master found, relying on the testimony of Dr. Leocoris as well as Dr. Romberg, that there was no rechallenge, certainly not after the third dose of the HPV vaccine, but also after the dose of the second HPV vaccine, noting that there was evidence in the record that petitioner's symptoms had started earlier. Petitioner is merely asking this court to reweigh the evidence, which, as Judge Lurie brought up on inquiry with petitioner, is not an inquiry this court undertakes per the standard of review.
I'd like you to comment, if you would. Do you have a copy, maybe, of the Doles case before you?
I do, Your Honor.
All right. In part six, it's a recent case, so I don't have the fed forth citation, but there's a paragraph in part six of the opinion in which
Thank you, Your Honor, for letting me get there. Does the court have part six, you said?
Part six, mm-hmm. That's right. If you have the Westlaw version.
I do.
It's at star eight. There's a paragraph that begins, throughout this case. Do you have that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The second sentence in that paragraph. The question in this case has been whether Ms. Doles provided any evidence to support the plausibility of her theory by a preponderance of the evidence. So the court's using plausibility in that setting. Can you interpret that for us as to why that doesn't effectively adopt a plausibility standard?
2 points there, Your Honor. First, I would note that per the quote Your Honor read, this court still asserts that it's a preponderance of the evidence standard. So,
Well, I understand that, but the problem, it seems to me, with talking about the preponderance of the evidence is what Olfin did, which is to say, A, the standard is a preponderance of the evidence. B, you can satisfy that preponderance standard if you show A, 1, 2, and 3 of the Olfin standards. So you may say, well, that depending on how you read those standards, that waters down the preponderance of the evidence standard, or you could say, well, those are reasonable ways to talk about what's necessary to establish a preponderance. So simply saying a preponderance is required doesn't, seems to me, get you by the problem of often saying preponderance is defined by satisfying 1, 2, and 3. So if you can comment on that.
Sure. So one point as to Alfin, Your Honor. The only place where Alfin mentions plausibility is when discussing the rejected Stevens test. So I would argue that to the extent it's mentioned in Alfin, it is at best dicta and no more than that.
How about Doles?
To the point that Your Honor is making in Doles, we've seen courts occasionally use the plausibility phrase to describe the quality of the evidence. I think there's two questions here, whether or not you're offering preponderant evidence, which is the burden, and whether or not you're offering a quality of evidence, which we've seen this court use the words reliable, reputable, sound. But that doesn't change the ultimate burden. It just describes the quality as to the persuasiveness and the weight. Now, The government would contend that plausibility should not be used to describe the quality of the evidence. But to the extent it is being used, it's merely describing the quality. The reason the government thinks that plausibility should not be utilized in this way to describe the quality of the evidence presented is, frankly, for the exact reason that we're standing here. It creates confusion amongst the trial courts and results in people using or attempting to use a lesser burden of proof. Because plausibility ultimately is more of a quantitative word that's being used in a qualitative way here, which is concerning because it does... I see my time is almost up, Your Honor. Would the court object to me briefly finishing my answer?
No, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. When using a quantitative term to describe quality of evidence, it grafts on what appears to be a lesser standard. There's a reason this court has now heard this issue three times in the last 2 years, and it's because of using this quantitative word to describe the quality of the evidence. But no, Your Honor, I don't think Doles contravenes preponderance. I think it's merely using some inartful phrasing to describe the quality of the evidence. Okay. If the court has no further.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hansen.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Kropmal, please proceed.
Your Honor, preponderance is the legal standard. It's more probable than not. It's 50.001%. It's a feather on the scale of justice. Right? That's the legal standard for our having to bring a medical theory. That's why I said at the beginning that these two things are sort of conflated. So preponderance is the legal theory that we have to meet. And we did that, right? By bringing a medical theory that is supported by peer-reviewed medical literature, the exhibits that both sides added here, case studies that the chief special master discounted, and Dole says you have to count. Another error that the chief special master made, Judge Lurie, is he demanded a biological, the mechanism of how this occurs. And that's not only unnecessary in Alton, but it's impossible to prove because respondent's expert says, we know why this happens, molecular mimicry, the alphabet of cells that cause this to happen, but we don't know how it happens. And the chief special master is demanding how this occurs, right? And that is legal error. As an example, this pen drops to the podium by gravity. We know what gravity is. We know that it's the attraction that two bodies of mass has for each other, but we don't know how gravity works. We don't know what components make it happen. If gravity was part of this vaccine program, the special master would deny that this pen drops to the podium because we don't know how it happens. We don't know the mechanism. That is legal error. So the two things, the two main things that that were appealing Judge Corcoran's opinion is that he's asking for science certainty that is not required. He's asking for a mechanism that is not required and can't be proved. Even their experts say, we don't know why autoimmune happens. Okay? But those are the two errors here.
Counsel, we're out of time. Thank
his
you very
peer-reviewed
much.
Articles are not
I
enough.
I thank both counsel. The case is taken under submission. Please.